something strange in your neighborhood, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
If there's something weird and it don't look good, who you gonna call?
Ghostbusters.
If you're seeing things running through your head,
all right, it's time for our all-woman Ghostbuster show. The Ghostbusters are all women. Our guests are all women. What we did was to invite all of our female nose panelists onto the show. There's eight of them here today. I will quickly tell you who they all are. Teresa Kramer, a writer and editor at eContent Magazine, founding editor of The Cut. Tanisha Dugan, producing associate at TheaterWorks. She walked in yet? No, she hasn't come in yet. Oh, there you are. Yeah. And Elizabeth Kiefer, professor of English at Tungsten Community College. Vivian Martin, chair of the Department of Journalism at Central Connecticut State University. Carolyn Payne, actress, comedian, dancer, founder, director, choreographer of Kinetic Dance. Irene Papoulis, lecturer at the Alan K. Smith Center for Writing and Rhetoric at Trinity College. Kate Rushen, poet, editor, and educator. Tracy Wu Fastenberg, director of development at the Mark Twain House and Museum. That's all we have time for. Thanks for listening. Drive carefully. Thanks. Go see the movie. We all went to see Ghostbusters, the new Ghostbusters. We are going to talk about it in several different ways. And then in the second segment, one of the stars of Ghostbusters, Leslie Jones, found herself caught up in an extremely unpleasant Twitter war, basically. I guess that's what we call them now. And we're going to talk about that and maybe a little bit about what the underpinnings of that are, too. But we'll begin with – and what we're going to do, too, is because we have so many panelists. We have four at a time. We're going to change on the fly. You'll hear – it's like hockey anyway. We'll do line changes,
people
basically.
People
falling and tripping over cords and stuff, and you'll really love that. So we're going to start. We've got Vivian. We've got Wu. We've got Elizabeth. And we've got Kate at the microphones right now. We're just going to begin with an overview of this movie. So, Vivian, you know, there's a couple of ways to remake or reboot something, but basically this is the kind of movie that doesn't really, except in very sly postmodern ways, ever acknowledge that anything like this ever happened before. This movie tells the story of a world that has no Ghostbusters and then gets Ghostbusters, right?
Right.
And so, I mean, how one of the first questions I have is about, like, remakes are hard. We know that, right? It's hard to do something, remake something, and do it really well. Do they ultimately prove that we need another Ghostbusters movie?
No.
First, let me say,
right,
I laughed
everybody go
through
home
it.
Now.
I laughed through it, yeah. And I enjoyed parts of it, but I think there was a failure of imagination. And it's particularly frustrating because everything that I've read, all of the interviews with Paul Feig, the writer-director, he's talking about all the different things he didn't want to do. He didn't want a world where there had been Ghostbusters or where the women would be coming out and having to defend the Ghostbusters' honor. So there were a lot of things he rejected, but in the end, he didn't really turn it upside down too much. And so we have the casting. The casting is problematic. It's the premise of the story. And I think you said this, and I need to cite you. I don't want to be accused of plagiarism, but you said something like...
We've had too much of that this
right,
week.
Right. You said something like, you know, he doesn't commit to a premise. And I think that is true, because initially there's an interesting story there, the backstory about the relationship between the Melissa McCarthy character and the Kristen Wiig character. And you think, oh, this is going to really play out, and it doesn't. And so there are pieces like that. All of the characters had their, you know, had issues, but as you know, I take more issue with the stereotypical trope, as do many writers on the internet, so I'm not saying anything that fresh, and I guess that kind of makes the point even more, the way the Leslie Jones character is cast. When I first saw, you know, I liked the movie, the 1984 movie, movie. But I always had issues with this sort of fourth Ghostbuster because I never really figured out how the Winston character fits in. Mm-hmm. I took another look at the original, and after seeing the new one, I wasn't fair to Ernie Hudson's character. And I know he has issues, too, about that whole sort of like, you know, and I've used the term sort of the affirmative action hire just kind of pushed in there. But the more when I go back now, he's a really good everyman voice, whereas I don't see that with Leslie. I see it as.
Well, no, she's doing a very different thing. Let's hang on to Leslie Jones a little bit until the second segment because she's going to be our whole second segment. So Tracy Wu Fastenberg, this movie does bring together four of the top comic talents in America today for people who are living under rocks. And we're talking about Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, Kate McKinnon, and Leslie Jones. Three of the four are from Saturday Night Live. Also, three of the four are women in their 40s. There aren't a lot of movies these days that are built around three women in their 40s as star vehicles here. But they're all enormous comic talents. And so one of the questions is, can they work as an ensemble? You know, do we get out of them everything that we hope to get out of them? How did this movie work for you?
I'm not sure that we did get everything out of them that we could have. I'm familiar with all of them. I'm not a regular SNL watcher, but, you know, enough to know who they are and to know that they have a relatively broad range. But I feel like each one seemed to sort of stay in exactly what I expected of them. You know, none of them did anything really different than what we've seen them do before. And I also don't think that it really showcased their talent the same way. And I think Carolyn had mentioned this, that she wasn't sure whether it was the writing or the performance. And I'm still not sure which one it is either. But I just felt like every step of the way there was just a little something lacking. And to be fair, I haven't seen the first one, so I don't have – or the first two – so I don't have anything to compare it to.
She only emigrated to this country about a year ago.
Yes.
That's the reason. She's really, you know, newly naturalized.
I really did live under a rock, but I do know who these four women are.
In the Trump administration, you will be required to watch Ghostbusters before you get your naturalization paper.
After they put the wall in front of me.
Right, exactly. So somehow or other, yes. So, several people had not seen the original Ghostbusters. I don't personally understand that, but that's fine.
I can't explain it.
So, you know, Kate, this brings up the question. I mean, I think comedy ultimately does need some kind of propulsion. If you're gonna have a comic premise that works for 2 hours, it needs to be propelled by something. I mean, what's the fuel of this particular iteration? Did you find it there?
You know, I go to the movies, especially lately, to laugh, and I accept movies as cartoons. And so I was ready to laugh at a cartoon, but I feel that the director, to me it goes back to the direction, that the director chose the wrong cartoon. And I thought that creating the Kristen Wiig character on kind of like a 1950s mousy librarian was just wrong. Just base it on today's hip, stylish, tatted PhD women. You know, and I just wish.
Oh, I love that. You just got.
And you know, just and I wish everybody had been stepped up, more stylish, more sharp, more hip. I would have liked that cartoon.
I mean, we have some professors right here in this room, and I would not call any of y'all mousy or any of those stereotypes. You know, so I think they could have done more.
Well, although Elizabeth, I mean, Elizabeth, they're under no requirement to stick to the original vibe or premise of 1984. But in 1984, this was about nerds, about unfashionable, unlovely, unstylish nerds whom nobody took seriously. I mean, really, a lot of the original movie is Bill Murray trying to convert Sigourney Weaver, trying to get her to believe in him as a romantic object and as somebody who knows what he's talking about. I mean, in a way, making these women stylish, it would have been taking the argument to a different place anyway.
Well, there was something very sexy about Bill Murray in the original one. I just rewatched it recently, and he was a smooth talker and just a dryly funny, wry guy. I didn't see any characters here who I thought were sexy and appealing, including Chris Hemsworth, who seemed to be thrown in as the dumb eye candy and was way too dumb. And they didn't even dress him up like eye candy, in my opinion. They could have used his assets a little better than they did. So, yeah, I don't know. I didn't find anybody who I thought was appealing. And I also had a problem with very, very smart women being portrayed as super goofy or super wimpy and cowering. And I just didn't see their smarts come through. I made the point that Kristen Wiig's character was supposed to have a PhD in physics, and I don't remember even one point in the movie, maybe there was one, where she used her physics knowledge.
Well, there's a lot of physics talk. A lot of it's coming from Kate McKinnon.
Right. And she's just sort of saying yes, but yeah. She's got the PhD in physics. So I found it demeaning toward women, and I didn't think it moved us forward in any way. And comedies can move us forward.
They can. I don't know if that's always their job, right?
No, but they can. And this one just seemed to move lots of folks back.
So am I correct that none of you four liked this movie very much? Or Kate has something she wants to say?
Well, you know, I liked it, but I was disappointed. You know, I did not see the original. Mm-hmm. And why not? I thought, why didn't I see it?
You're also recently naturalized?
No, I was working in a feminist bookstore. I didn't have a TV. And I went to see art films at the Orson Welles Cinema in Cambridge. What can I tell you?
You get a pass then.
Yeah.
All right. But when I looked at the trailer for the original Ghostbusters, the energy just popped off the screen. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what's the difference? I Googled a bit. Murray and Aykroyd were in their 30s. They were all in their 30s. And Aykroyd and Murray were already big SNL stars. And I think all of their confidence and bravado and whatever just came off
but
the screen.
But these women are all huge stars. They're bigger stars really than Murray and Aykroyd were at that point. Well, maybe
in their
Murray
40s.
Was.
Yeah. In their 40s.
But they also didn't play them that way. Even right. the Melissa right. McCarthy character, who normally is a big presence on the screen, she was told to dial it way back. And I agree with Anthony Lane from The New Yorker that the funniest bits she had were with the Chinese, the guy who brought the Chinese takeout food.
Who Wu doesn't like because he's not Chinese.
He was not Chinese. There was no good Asian representation as far as East Asian.
All right. You know what? We have to do a line change here to get the other four involved here. So while that's happening, I'll blabber to cover up here. One thing that I'll say about this is I think one of the failures of this movie and one of the ways it differs from the original template is that there isn't enough non-nerd pushback. So in the original movie, almost everybody's against them. Almost everybody looks down on them. Almost everybody resists them. I actually think this movie could have been vastly improved in two ways. One of them is Charles Dance is at the the beginning of the movie, he's the stuffy, obnoxious, insufferable Tywin Lannister type supervisor of the Columbia physics program, just looking down his nose at Kristen Wiig. And he's terrific, and the tension between them is great. I would have loved to have seen more people like him or maybe him all the way through the movie. And I also would have loved to see, I mean, Michael K. Williams or Michael Kenneth Williams, who's really one of the great actors of our day, is walking around with this nothing role as this auxiliary federal agent. He would have been such a great villain for this movie. I mean, he really would have been – he would have been a villain with the kind of magnitude that it takes to really push back against the Ghostbusters. I would have loved to have seen somebody like him instead of this obscure writer who I never heard of and kind of disappears almost immediately as a villain. So, all right,
I wonder
now,
if they were like super self-conscious and so they thought –
Can't have a black villain?
Or no, just that they thought that all of the male characters had to take a back seat mm-hmm. to the female heroines. And so we could never really get a male character that was fully formed in any way because it just seemed as if they were really self-conscious about making it a man film.
Right. This movie doesn't have a Sigourney Weaver, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You know, because maybe, yeah, for the reason that you said. I want to talk a little bit about the use of some of these specific performers. They are incredibly talented performers. Irene, as we were emailing around, you were sort of saying, well, it seemed as though only one woman could be truly comically, antically goofy and fey, and that in this case was Kate McKinnon.
Right. And I mean, unlike Tracy, I am a lifelong watcher of Saturday Night Live. And when Kristen Wiig came out on that show, she was so out there. Like, she seemed like, you know, that guy that used to eat the apple, jump up on the table and eat the apple just like really fast and throw it all over. He was so out there. And she was sort of in the tradition. The first woman that I mean, you know, forget about the old ones from the 80s. Gilda Radner was kind of like that, too. But just I love that sort of out there, will do anything, isn't concerned about how it looks because she's just going to go for it as a comedian. She seems like she has the potential to that for that. And so that's why I was so disappointed at her mousy character and characterization of the physics person. You know, I just like, come on, Kristen, don't be so, you know, like, and also the character being, you know, she's up for tenure in physics at Columbia and she's afraid to give a lecture. That's just impossible. You know, anyone at that level has given so many lectures. Yeah. She would never be. And that's the opening scene of the movie, or pretty much the opening scene. And, you know, I just felt like, come on. But at the same time, I really want to say, though, that the fact that they made it over with women in itself, I want to applaud, you know, and that they didn't have to have a much of a romantic story, that it was really about the women fighting, you know, the good guys who were the women fighting the bad guy. You know, there's something, you know, even though I agree with everybody that they didn't really, it didn't really work as a movie, at least that attempt is worth applauding.
Although, Teresa, I mean, really, this created a situation, I think, unlike any I've ever seen. I mean, partly because social media wasn't around forever, but this movie, before it opened, before there was, you know, a complete print of it for anybody to watch, already had all these daggers stuck in it for exactly because of the thing that Irene's talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think to some degree the movie sort of seems like it was the movie itself was the afterthought. I think Paul Feig looked at these actresses and were sort of like, I just want to figure out how to get them all into a movie together, and was like, oh, Ghostbusters, you know. But and I will say I actually liked it as far as a silly summer comedy goes. I don't really expect that much, and I laughed a lot, and there were some points that weren't that funny, but whatever.
Did you engage with all the, like, you know, special effects stuff?
You mean, do I just like that stuff in general?
Yeah.
No, I didn't really care.
Were you thinking like, go, get them,
get the haunted balloons?
To the special, Carolyn, to the special effects part. There's so many things I want to talk to you guys about, but to the special effects part, one of the things that I realized was I've seen all this before. Like, I've seen things squirt out of proton packs and trap ghosts. Like, I've seen exactly that. And since I've watched the original Ghostbusters five times, I've seen it five times.
Yeah, and the ghosts weren't even good. I was really mad about that, the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade of ghosts that
it
these ghosts
me
come
of the
back
haunted
to
mansion.
Possess. Yeah, they possess balloons and then attack them. I mean, it was just so bizarre, and it wasn't even cool. And that was the other thing, that the 1984 one and then the second one, Ghostbusters 2, were they kind of looked better too. This one, you know, this epic battle scene in this computer-generated Times Square did nothing for me, whereas, you know, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in the original one attacking a building, he looked so much more real and cool.
Evil.
Yeah. The banality of evil, yeah.
Yes.
So can we just – I would just want to pause on Irene's point about Kristen Wiig. I actually think – and I know you guys have seen one of her more serious roles – that Kristen Wiig is really looking for a different kind of career anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. I said in one email she's one Fisher King-type role away from being what Robin Williams became, this fabulously, deeply talented comic performer who can also do other stuff. And I know that you both saw Welcome to Me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Carolyn, do you want to tell people what that is?
yeah, I mean, it's the thing with this movie, she wins a lottery, and she buys herself a talk show. That is like a vehicle.
She's mentally ill. She's,
yeah.
She's bipolar slash borderline. She changes throughout the movie
right.
for some reason. But,
yeah. And she buys herself a talk show as her own vehicle to fame and everything that she imagines she wants out of her life that
Wait a
prior
minute.
To
That's
this
my
had
life
been.
You're describing right now. I should be suing them. Well, but anyway, Teresa, it represents also her attempt to stretch. We've also seen her in
yes.
small roles and stuff like The Martian. You know, she's trying to have something other than your typical post-Saturday
She was
night.
Also in a movie called The Skeleton Twins
right.
with, mm-hmm. is it Bill Hader? Or
yeah, it is Bill Hader.
It's
think,
Bill
yeah.
Hader,
yeah.
which is actually really dark and they're still funny, and Welcome to Me is funny, but she's definitely trying to have a different – she doesn't want a slapstick
not,
career.
Again, I don't know if it's the writing in that one or the performance, but something was off for me where I just couldn't embrace her, where I was like, all right, she's really moving into this new – a new level here as an actor.
I can't quite buy the Robin Williams. I mean, he to me is like an icon, and I don't know if Kristen Wiig is one performance away from iconic status. But I do think that she is absolutely trying to move into a different space. And I think in one of the threads, because as you guys know, I'm a very quiet emailer when the threads start going. But I did have to say that once she started sort of gunning for the covers of Vogue, that's when she became kind of a less interesting character actor. And I think that's because she's trying to move into leading lady status, which I don't think Robin Williams was ever gunning for. But I don't think he was ever like, I want to be like Tom Hanks. He was very firmly, you know, a character actor, capable of changing his like metamorphosizing himself for a role, not like Jim Carrey, but in a more like genuine, authentic way. I don't know if Kristen Wiig can completely.
And I think Ghostbusters was the wrong movie for her to be trying to play it serious.
Well, and I don't even know if she was. She was, as you know, to Irene's point, was playing this stereotype of a 1950s, and Kate's point, and you know, 1950s stereotype.
And she always seems to play that sort of role of like kind of ditzy and like she's kind of smart, but she doesn't really get it. That get something that everybody else gets in terms
of
how to behave.
And of all the actresses to give us like that kind of like sexy female, you know, smart, she was the type that could have like landed that for us in a really funny, you know, exciting way.
Well, the weird thing about her casting, I think, is that she was in the straight man role, and it could have almost been anyone. They could have just grabbed anyone and put them in that role. And she's one of the bigger I mean, it's her and Melissa McCarthy, right, that can carry a movie. The other two haven't really done movies at this point. So why was she the one who was sort of slotted into this nothing character? I don't quite get that. They might as well have just got someone they could have paid less money and let them do it.
Totally. It's sad thing is maybe she thought she was being funny.
Yikes.
Well, I think also this is a movie that really does, you know, it hasn't really picked an approach. I mean, we sort of said that already. But one of the approaches it tries is being a movie about this somewhat fractured friendship between Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig's characters, that they knew each other in high school. They drifted apart. Now they're getting back together over ghosts. And so it's a little bit of that, but it doesn't really kind of hold together at that. But you know, I was saying during the shift change, Irene, that to me, one of the problems is there isn't enough pushback from the rest of the world. Like, I would like Charles Dance to be in the movie the whole time, telling them they're idiots, they don't know what they're talking about, so that they could overcome that pushback. And I think one of the things that makes it a slightly anti-feminist movie is a lot of the pushback they get is from themselves. I mean, this is kind of – you hear a lot about their doubts.
But see, that's – you know, I don't know if that's anti-feminist.
Well,
that's just real.
I was just being provocative. You know?
Yeah. I mean, so, but it seems like they have their doubts, but they actually can do something. And, you know, they can I agree with you, though, that I don't know. I wouldn't call it – maybe I would call it anti-feminist, you know, but because they – well, the way that they don't manage to really own their power.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of like, ooh.
Well, I think it's Kristen Wiig who doesn't own her power, right? Melissa McCarthy and Kate McKinnon are like, there are ghosts and we're going to find them and I don't care what you say.
McKinnon was the breakout star for me in this. I found she just stole every scene she was in. And prior to this, I find her funny, but I didn't think that she was going to be some next great comedy star.
She was making interesting choices.
Right.
The other ones
struck
kind
me
of,
here. Yeah. She created – I mean, this is a very cartoonish film. In some ways, as a huge fan of the originals and having had watched the real Ghostbusters cartoon that was on TV in the 80s and 90s, this movie kind of followed that cartoon that they created for television more than the films. It had that very – like, they could have just animated this, to be honest. But
with female voices.
Yeah. But
I had a problem with McKinnon's character. First of all, I love Kate McKinnon. I wait for her to come out and do Angela Merkel or Billie Jean King.
Or the lady who gets abducted by the aliens.
Yeah, I don't like that one so much. And I love her Russian lady. I just think this woman is a genius.
Yeah.
And I mean, to say nothing of her Hillary, obviously. But I just, in this movie, it seemed to me, Carolyn, that the only script instruction she was ever given was just be weird.
But I thought that was wonderful for her.
It took me about 40 minutes to get that was all I was ever going to get out of it.
Right. Yeah. But I thought she took a part that was kind of written as a very small role and just mugged it, but in a really well done way that created its own iconic character. I thought she was the only character that could live on.
Right.
Because, you know, like Venkman and Egon, those were real iconic caricatures that were created by those actors, and she created one that the others, I felt, just didn't.
We're going to have to do another break and a shift change, but before we do this, Tanisha, I just want to say, kind of in response to some of what's been said about Kristen Wiig, I want to at least offer a defense of this, of the, you should pardon the expression, the straight man. It's hard to do that well. The people who do that well make everybody else a lot funnier. Really, you take Carl Reiner away from Mel Brooks in his early career, you don't have so much Mel Brooks. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the people who are great straight men, or it should be straight persons or something like that.
Straight people.
That seems like we're talking about something else entirely at that point. Right. But anyway, you know, that's a skill. I'm not saying that Kristen Wiig is best deployed that way, but it is a skill. It's not nothing.
You're right. It is absolutely a skill. And I think when you take, you know, these three women who have been anointed by Lorne Michaels, it's difficult to ask them to do something that is sort of diametrically opposed to what they do on that show. And so you are asking Kristen Wiig to sort of step out of quote-unquote character and play that. But I think she could have done it in the Vogue sort of manner in which she's trying to present herself to the world, and we would have gotten the straight man that I think we women deserve, and one that would have helped the story to sort of move forward in a way that seemed realistic.
All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk about the painful odyssey of Leslie Jones after this. Welcome back to our all-women discussion of the all-woman Ghostbusters. We are now going to move on to the story of Leslie Jones. Leslie Jones is this fabulous comic talent. I won't call her a young comic talent. She's, in fact, the oldest person ever hired at Saturday Night Live. In other words, she was hired at the oldest age anybody's ever been hired at Saturday Night Live. I think she was maybe about 46 at the time. She's 48 now. In Trainwreck, she was so funny that the makers of Trainwreck just invented a role for her to have just so that she'd pop up for a couple of seconds. And she actually, her big line is, "Do I look like I work for the MTA?" Well, in Ghostbusters, she does work for the MTA. And so she's kind of a subway employee who gets drifts into and inserts herself into the role of the other Ghostbusters and kind of just pulls out all the stops in typical Leslie Jones fashion. However, not everybody has warmed to this. Teresa Kramer, maybe give people a sense of what did happen on social media.
So Leslie Jones got a bunch of hateful, nasty tweets from a bunch of trolls until she basically just said, "That's it, I'm quitting Twitter." But Twitter was like, "Oh, no, that's not cool." And then so the trolls were led by this guy whose name I can't pronounce. It's Milo Yiannopoulos or something. He's a British guy who's works for Breitbart and is known for basically being a troll.
Of course he works for
Yes. he's awful. I've heard about him in the past on some podcasts I listen to. He's sort of the new leader of the alt-right, and he's creepy. And so he ended up getting permanently kicked off of Twitter for leading this revolt against against Leslie Jones. And she is now back on Twitter specifically to live tweet Game of Thrones, according to her.
But that's like a year.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones is over.
I know. She was making a joke. She was like, "Who's going to live tweet Game of Thrones if I don't do it?" But so
you know,
she's back now.
Vivian, there's something kind of heartbreaking about this, just in the sense that Leslie Jones, if you've read the New Yorker profile of her, she's a woman who's I would say she's waited a long time for this to happen. But she's been just a very hardworking comedian for a very long time and is getting a little bit later in her career than most people the kind of breaks that you dream of. Mm-hmm. But this is, for her, this tremendous opportunity. And it really – there were a lot of people who on a very racial and racist basis tried to kind of take that moment away from her.
Right. I'm having mixed feelings about this. Obviously, Twitter should have shut them down sooner. But her interactions with them, she fed the trolls. And any of us of color who have done public work, you get that kind of stuff and you know about it. When I was an op-ed columnist for The Current, I just remember being really frightened a couple of times by people –
who hung around at the Free Republic website, and they put my picture there, and they were mad about something I had said about George Bush. So I can feel the pain in part of that. I guess she's a little different in that she shares it publicly. She was tweeting about nobody making her a dress. She couldn't get a designer to make her a dress, and so some of it is, I mean, her personality. A lot of that's over the top, but of course it doesn't give them the haters any excuse. Though I wouldn't be surprised if some of that hate is coming from blacks as well. We can't assume that all of that is, because just that type of character and what it brings up in some people.
And so, who she is, I mean, right. To your point about her coming to this later in life, okay, there's the ageist part of it.
Right.
But she's also not Zoe Saldana. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is absolutely in the body of a Nina Simone. You know, here's this very large, and by that I mean tall, mm-hmm. woman with very black features. She's not trying to make the hair look European in any way. She sort of is who she is. And I think you're right that there is definitely a contingent of black people who are like, I don't know if that's how you should be presenting yourself now that you've gotten to where you've gotten.
Although,
you know?
Interestingly, I think it's true that Saturday Night Live hired, and I can never think of her name because she's disappeared into the background, a much
Sashir
more conventionally. Conventionally attractive, more demure,
younger.
You know, younger, more ready for primetime looking African American comic performer, and thinking, well, that'll be the person we put out front, and maybe Leslie Jones will be writing stuff or whatever.
But Leslie plays the stereotypes that we are comfortable seeing. And I was actually surprised in this film that she didn't lean harder into. I mean, it was the nameplate necklace that was a little more stereotypical than her actual performance was.
Right.
But when she's on SNL, she is every black stereotype you can imagine. And she does not shy away from it. That is like what she does. So it's not surprising to me that she's risen to the top in terms of her usability on that show, because even Kenan Thompson. No, it's not Keenan. It's the other.
Jay Farrow?
No,
Jay
it is Keenan.
Yeah. Keenan. Yes.
I was a Nickelodeon kid, so all I could see was Keenan and Kel in my mind. I was like, which one is it? But even Kenan Thompson, he plays to, you know, the stereotypical American black, you know, trope that we want to see.
Right. Well, this is the struggle, right? I mean, like somebody, there were actually 123 emails sent. We
yes, the most of ever.
most ever, well, among all of you for this show. But somebody said, I'm going to think it might have been Kate, but I'm not 100% sure. It would have been interesting to see Leslie Jones as one of the physicists and somebody else as the MTA employee. Although, Tracy Wu Fastenberg, on the other hand, there are things that Leslie Jones does very well. Maybe they do, as Tanisha says, say, fall into the realm of stereotype. But she's really good at them, you know? And it feels like in her first movie, she should really get to do the stuff that she just nails. Or maybe I'm –
but you know,
tell me I'm wrong.
I've struggled with this.
Or Tanisha.
Where, where I feel like, you know, she's made it to this place where she's, you know, a name that's recognizable. She's a face that's recognizable. You know, there's a certain level of responsibility that comes with this. Shouldn't she carry it further? But then at the same time, she also has a responsibility to do herself, you know, to do what she's most comfortable with, what she's comfortable embracing, and making that acceptable also. So I sort of struggle between the two, because I understand she's fulfilling a stereotype that some folks have argued against, you know, of saying, you know, we African Americans always seem to fall into that, you know, black artists always seem to fall into that if they're going to be successful, and we as Americans seem to crave that. Well, but at the same time, if she's okay with it, then I think that we have to be okay with it on a certain level also.
I think there's element of her, you know, she's not a great actress, right? She was a stand-up comedian a couple years ago. She spent a few years on SNL. Her acting chops are what they are. And she's playing herself, right? She's basically – they've changed her name to Patty, but she's just being herself up there. And she's pretending to be a Ghostbuster as herself. And so, you know, how – it could. Part of me wonders, like
– could she do something else?
Not the could she do something else, but those characters would have been completely – like had she been the Kate McKinnon character, that would have been a completely different character.
But we have to remember stereotypes are harmful. I think when we were having the conversation, someone said, well, Woody Allen plays the stereotypes around Jewish men. a certain type of Jewish male, and yet, you know, many Jewish men run Hollywood, have a lot of power in Hollywood, so it doesn't have the same barrier in terms of advancement and employers in the world seeing black people in a different way and even seeing them as less frightening when they make stop, when police make stops. So there's just this bigger backstory there. And yet at the same time, I think it's important to say that we don't want to negate the reality of, you know, black women who work at the MTA. And I know that there have been some stories about people at the MTA who said, we don't see ourselves on the screen and there she is. Mm. Although I would argue that you see more of that than you see black female physicists.
True. We have to do a line change. We have to get your sisters
in here. I'm not ready.
I know. You've got to get your sisters in here. So while we're doing the line change, I'll just quickly say, it does seem as though Leslie Jones is caught in a no-win situation when you phrase it that way, that people like Chris Rock have looked at her and said, this woman, she just has incredible comic chops. She should get used a lot more. So she gets this role and she has these particular comic chops that she's developed and has a slightly, well, I mean, interestingly, in the New Yorker piece, she almost has kind of an anti-intellectual point of view of comedy, too. She says too much of comedy is writing all this really smarty-pants dialogue and putting it in the mouths of other people. And I'm all about the performance. And this is the kind of performance she gives. And then people sort of say, well, that one doesn't really taste right to us.
I think she could have done a really hilarious job being a scientist, being herself as a scientist. Why not? You know, that's her job, you know.
I want to see a movie where she plays a scientist.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it might not be this particular movie. Although, you know, I mean, in some ways, Elizabeth, the other reaction that I was having this week is, I mean, there were some of these tweets were horrible, and there were tweets of the Cincinnati Zoo gorilla and, you know, I mean, just like things you – I just thought – can this be 2016? I mean, I guess here's this person who's really, really funny and they're making her into a gorilla. I just, you know, how can that be even how can this be happening?
It's only going to get worse, I think, because there's a lot of copycatting among the trolls and they're getting press. Mm-hmm. And I think the more that they get press and there's no way for them not to, the more emboldened they're going to be to post this kind of stuff. So I don't see an end to it.
But that even raises the question, Kate, of whether we do a good enough job. I mean, one of the questions about Twitter has been, you know, do they do a good enough job of trying to create some kind of environment where these kinds of things are kept to a minimum? Obviously, a lot of Twitter's appeal is that you can do anything you want.
You know, there's that the First Amendment argument that's always brought up, but I just see a general overall coarsening of the public conversation on all levels everywhere. And it doesn't actually surprise me that Leslie Jones got this kind of pushback. I won't call it pushback, this kind of attack. And I think that the movie didn't help. And I think of the scene, the Rock scene, where she's Melissa McCarthy character crowd surfs, and then the big laugh is that the crowd, the audience parts, and Leslie Jones' character splats. Mm-hmm. That was organically not funny to me. Mm-hmm. But then what made it funny to me, memorable, was Leslie Jones' improv retort. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is a race thing or a lady thing, but I'm mad as hell. Mm-hmm. And that's the takeaway line from the movie for me, because that resonates with my life and my experience and the experience of others. So that's what I take away from this whole Leslie Jones controversy, Twitter controversy, because there's disrespect. I think the character, in a sense, is disrespected in the film. Perhaps she's disrespected as an actor, and then she's disrespected on Twitter.
Well, so, Carolyn, I will now ask you to speak for the entire comedy establishment. But,
great.
I mean, I think everybody sort of thought it would be maybe like the fire station in the original Ghostbusters, and that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and, like, everybody would just go running towards the pole and slide down it and go running off to defend Leslie Jones. And in a way, she twisted slowly in the wind for a while before people came to her aid.
Yeah, and that was concerning and confusing, especially, you know, from her cast members in, you know, who they're celebrating the opening of the film. They're all in the public eye together. And when this happens,
I just think that people don't even know how they don't know how to respond to something like this. And I mean, I just, this is why, and I keep saying this, I feel like I say this every time I'm on the show, I hate Twitter. And like every time I like start to like dip my toes back into the Twitter pool, like I literally tweeted for the first time earlier, like the week that this happened in like months. And then this happened. I was like, I'm done with this again. I can't, it's just for some reason, the social media medium of Twitter just invites this kind of sort of it's like people think there's a wall up and they can just say whatever they want. And then it also, like, when people do respond to things, it's really hard to understand how to take it.
Part of it is the anonymous Twitter handles, too. You can
right. That's
hide.
What I'm saying. They're all hiding behind this
people
wall.
Used to write it on the bathroom wall. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. But I also think that Colin saying, well, I'm not, how can this still be in 2016 is part of the reason. Because I think, there's something, there is a change going on in our culture. And I was thinking about that watching the convention all this week, too. Like, there's a change, we had Obama as president, the Supreme Court voted to support gay marriage, there's a change going on. And so that brings up the vile energy that's been embedded below that. And I think for a lot of white liberals, it's really hard to sort of acknowledge that those forces are real. Those forces are a part of our culture, but they've been in some ways latent. We haven't necessarily seen them that much, but they're there. And so, like, the idea of change, the idea of women being superheroes is a version of that. It's like, wait a minute, something is changing. Something dramatic is changing in our culture, and it's inevitable. It's like, it's changing. It's on its way. But that other force comes up, and the people, like the other people on the the other actresses who didn't say anything, I mean, it's sort of like, I think what I would imagine is there's the same reaction that Colin had, like, well, this just can't be. They can't be calling her these things. So let's just try to pretend it's not there. It's better to just kind of ignore it and pretend it's not there, as opposed to really getting to the next step, in my view, which is to say, wow, we have to do something. We have to speak out against this. We have to do something against this. It's really important. It's really our job as people who are in the public eye, to do something about it.
I mean, I was probably being falsely ingenuous about that. I sort of understood that it was out there. And sometimes the question is, do you push back? Do you engage with these people, or do you pretend they didn't exist? You had something to say.
Well, I was just going to say that also this week there was like some sort of Twitter war with Taylor Swift and Kanye West. Mm-hmm. That I don't know if any. But that there was more back and forth going on and more people chiming in on that in some ways than on this issue, which just that again just seems like a ludicrous.
It's interesting, though, that the world of music, those battles do come. They're more public somehow. They're more sort of, I don't know.
Well, I think battles with Kanye West are more public.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess the other thing that I wondered, Kate, is Leslie Jones has this very specific persona, and it apparently, according to the New Yorker article, is a persona that she carries out over onto the set, too. She likes challenging people. She likes calling people out. She likes putting people in situations where they're not quite sure whether she's genuinely mad at them and contemptuous of them, or whether she's doing comedy. There's a scene in the New Yorker piece where she's kind of berating this young, fresh out of Harvard, young woman writer, and it's sort of not clear whether, she's really being mean, or she's making this into a funny moment. And I'm just wondering whether people look at that and say, oh, well, that's who she is. And I find myself thinking, probably buried down under all that is somebody who really, really got hurt by all this.
Well, yeah. Well, what I took away is someone who cried on some level as long as she's been out there, as many years as she's been out there as a stand-up, and she's on Saturday Night Live and she's co-starring in this big film. I think on some level she didn't know what hit her in terms of the gross intensity of the Twitter attack. And I also paid attention to the fact that Ghostbusters allowed her to get out of debt for the first time in her life mm-hmm. at 48. So I know it hurt her. I believe that it
hurt
her.
Well, I think as a comedian, kind of like, your nerves are more exposed, mm-hmm. I feel, at all times. And that so things – a lot of things you're able to kind of take and deflect and use. But there are some things that it just feels like – I think as somebody who uses comedy a lot as what starts out as like a child, I think, is like a defense mechanism. It's because like those nerve endings for you are just so – they're like right there and everything can burn a lot.
I'm going to be so much more gentle with you from now on. All right, we have to take a break. If we're going to do endorsements, we got to take a break. We'll come back. I can't see what people look at me, can only see the color of my face. Oh, yeah. And then don't try to help, God knows you always have to put me in my place. But I won't ask to be colorblind, because if you pick the truth, then girl, you should find. Black of the berry, sweet of the juice. I can say it ain't so, but darling, what's the use? The dark of the chocolate, the rich of the taste. Let me tell you quickly who did what. Betsy Kaplan's on the board today. The show was produced by Jonathan McPants. Liam Myers is our intern today. Greg Hill is our tweet master. You can, there's a lot of Twitter activity about this show, so check it out at WNPR Colin. We're also on Facebook, the Colin McEnroe Show Facebook page. We'll have that opening version of Ghostbusters up there, as well as all the audio from this show and everything else. Time to do some endorsements. Elizabeth Kiefer, what have you got for us?
I'm going to the Capitol Classics Othello next week. One of my colleagues, George Sebastian Coleman, is in it, and that's wonderful. Also, I went to Sunken Garden. We can't forget what a wonderful poetry series that is. There was great quirky music, these young men from Brooklyn. And tonight I'm going to Playhouse on Park to see A Chorus Line, which The Current said was a very nice little production.
Yes, we've already endorsed that one. There's actually a Carolyn Payne impersonator in Chorus Line.
Ganger.
We should say that the first two, Capitol Classics and Sunken Garden, are al fresco things, too. Mm. Capitol Classics is Shakespeare outdoors. Carolyn Payne, what have you got for us?
I am going to endorse the Netflix documentary Ghost Heads. I suggested it to the panel. It's really fascinating. If you were a big fan of the original franchise, it kind of follows these people who are they do like cosplay. They go into children's hospitals, and it just talks about how that movie and those movies and those actors influenced kind of a generation, which I feel a part of.
Ray Kate.
All right.
I didn't even know who was behind the monitor for a second.
I am going to endorse tomato paste in a tube. I love angel hair pasta.
Yeah.
And you squeeze a little of this in the pan and with some red pepper flakes and some olive oil, and you got a great tasty treat. And you can get it from Whole Foods for about $1.29.
It looks and like toothpaste.
Yes. It's like a toothpaste.
Right. Yeah, don't brush your teeth with it. Yeah.
Right. And if for those who want more flavor, there's also anchovy paste. And I just returned from a southern sojourn in Montgomery, Alabama and Mobile. And I recommend it for people who've never come.
All right, we've got 3 minutes left. So, wasn't Elizabeth and Carolyn and Kate vacate while Irene is endorsing? And we'll get some other endorsers up here.
I'm endorsing a movie that's basically the opposite of Ghostbusters in terms of genre. It's called A Bigger Splash. It's like he's one of my favorite directors. Tilda Swinton and Ralph Fiennes is in it, and it's just so emotionally interesting and A Bigger Splash.
Yeah, was playing at Trinity, isn't anymore. Teresa, what have you got?
I've been watching the second season of Jane the Virgin, which if you're interested in diversity, they do it very well, and they're also hilarious. It's basically a telenovela made for an American audience. It's great.
All right. Tracy?
I am going to endorse everybody sort of educating themselves on what microaggressions are in this sort of world where we've seen a whole lot of macroaggressions and people saying, well, I would never do that, but sort of examining ourselves and what we do every day that can be construed as microaggressions. And you can Google it, and there are a lot of good resources on the Googles.
All right. Vivian?
I'm reading White Trash, 400 Years of Social Class in America by historian Nancy Eisenberg. It's a really good way of understanding how we've left class out of the debate in America, but what it does is it shows us everything, from the beginning and the people who were sent here, lower classes to Sarah Palin and
lower classes to Sarah
right.
Palin? All right. Tanisha.
I'm endorsing alt community art, Tamat Astro. It's got performances this weekend. It's a dance company, local dance company at Town and County. Opens today, runs through the weekend, and also BuzzFeed superstar Matt Vorsmer, the E-cushionist, who plays live drums over our favorite pop hits, will be in town next Friday. So check those things out.
All right. I'll quickly endorse, since we're talking about Mr. Hemsworth, this particular Chris Hemsworth. There's three of them, actually. There's three of them. Obviously, he's Thor, but, I mean, he's really great in the movie Rush. Rush is this kind of overlooked Ron Howard movie. It's about race car drivers. He's sort of the second male lead in it. He's this terrifically dissipated smoking, drinking, womanizing race car driver. And he's just great. The guy that Tracy Wu doesn't like because he's the wrong ethnicity to deliver Chinese food, his name is Karan Soni. He's in Ghostbusters. He's also in a terrific movie called Safety Not Guaranteed, a wonderful independent movie with a lot of your favorite indie stars. And last, I'll endorse Kate McKinnon as Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which she's been – she did it at the conventions. It was terrific. How about a big round of applause for each other, sisters of the traveling McPants?